Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Welcome, everyone, to Pod After Touchdown. We are into week 14. Almost done with week 14.
I'm hurt, Andrew.
What's wrong, Sam?
Just like every other goddamn player this week.
Yeah, you've got a little something for us from Establish the Run about the injuries.
Okay, let's take a look at this list, which likely is not all conclusive. Mike Evans, hamstring. Patrick Mahomes, hand. Devontae Parker and Albert Wilson, head. Calvin Ridley, his abs. Jared Cook, his head. Jameis Winston, hand. Bilal Powell, ankle. Ryan Griffin, ankle. Rashad Penny, knee. Mark Andrews, knee. Noah Fant, foot. Auden Tate, leg. Darius Geis, knee.
My leg!
That is quite the list
of
players that got hurt.
Way more than I thought.
Some of which will play next week, but a lot of big-name players, Mike Evans included, could be shut down for the year, and is not great for players in the playoffs that have Mike Evans.
This is where fantasy football separates the championship winners, the champions from the one and dones, the men from the boys. And we're going to try and help you become men and women.
Wow. All right.
Fully formed adults that can win fantasy football championships. So without further ado, let's kick off.
And this game is underway.
So our kickoff question this week is starting to drip into reflecting on the season, which I've been doing a lot because of leagues that haven't gone well. And just thinking back to, wow, what players actually did pan out, which ones haven't. And we're going to start off with running back busts. And of this list of running backs, who has been the biggest bust this year? We've got some players that you have picked out for us, Sam.
Yeah, so these are all guys who were drafted in the first two rounds. You were expecting them to be bell cows for your team, carry you to potential championships, if not at least help carry you to the playoffs. And we'll go down this list by ADP. So the first is Saquon Barkley at 13.4 points per game. Second is Alvin Kamara at 13.8 points per game. Next is David Johnson at 12.2, Todd Gurley at 13.2, and Joe Mixon at 11.7. Now, those are all half-point PPR scoring, but I'm curious again, which of these running backs to you has been the biggest bust of the year so far?
Right, I think for me, looking at all those points per game, it's not like any of these guys killed you like Le'Veon Bell killed you if you drafted him last year. But for me, it's got to be Saquon because he was, in many scenarios, the 101. I actually had a friend give me some shit this last week saying, I told you should draft Christian McCaffrey with the one place you have a 101. And I was like, no, I'm going with the consensus. No one's going to hate me if I pick this pick. And it's definitely made things a little more difficult. Now, I'm still in the playoffs there, but it's crazy because you knew he was on a bad team, or arguably a bad team, but you thought the volume was going to be there, especially receptions, and that the line would be good enough for him to do what he did in his rookie season. But he had the sophomore slump. An ankle injury didn't help him in the middle of the season. And when you invest in the first pick overall, it stings a little bit harder than the others. So that's why I got to stick with say quads, and maybe he'll redeem himself at the end of this season.
I do agree with you that the draft capital you spent for Saquon surely makes it a tougher pill to swallow. I think as an Alvin Kamara owner in our league of record, it feels like him just because he hasn't had the ceiling that he has in the past, and that's because he's only scored two touchdowns this entire year, and that came in one game back in week three. But I think it's Joe Mixon because he was downright terrible the first half of the season. You kept putting him in your lineups because you were expecting something from him. I mean, the team hadn't really changed year over year, and he was still producing a decent amount in years past with a terrible offensive line, with Andy Dalton at quarterback, and he at least with Saquon, like, yes, he was hurt, but you were taking him out of your lineup.
Yeah,
like, you were putting Joe Mixon in your lineup, and he was getting 3 or 4 points in a given week. And I think a lot of the points per game that I mentioned have been accumulated over the past several weeks. And odds are, if you own Joe Mixon, that you're not really close to the championship, because he was so terrible in the beginning of the year that you just probably didn't get off to a great start. So
definitely he's so talented, but it is one of those things. I think I mentioned in one of our first episodes where I drafted him earlier in the off season in a couple leagues, and then as soon as you saw some of their offensive line acquisitions getting hurt or retiring, I think they had like three guys that were supposed to be starters were not going to be in the starting five come week one. So hopefully you faded him a bit. He definitely was not faded enough before the season started.
I mean, he is the only one of those five guys that we listed that's played every single game so far this year. So I think, again, it's because you're putting him in your lineup when you're expecting him to get something done and just hasn't done anything for you.
Yeah, these guys definitely altogether did not deliver to expectations on the season. But moving on, we're going to talk about our DiGiorno Players of the Week, players who did not deliver for you in Week 14. So, this might be the first time this year we actually take a look under the microscope at one of our very own Green Bay Packers, focusing on Davante Adams. I think this matchup was supposed to be a crime scene for Rodgers to Adams all day against the Washington R-Words, but somehow he was kept in check. Only 4 receptions for 41 yards against the Washington R-Words, which have been awful all year.
One of the worst teams in the league, and you can't do anything?
This was a very gross outing for that passing offense, and it was all Aaron Jones. It really sucks.
Yeah, my is another receiver as well, and this offense even played spectacularly. They upset the Texans. They scored 38 points, and Cortland Sutton did jack squat. He had 5 catches for 34 yards. Like, come on, man. Drew Lock explodes out of nowhere and bursts onto the scene to upset the supposedly good Texans.
Hey, man, there's only so many targets. You got Tim Patrick, Jeff Heirman, Noah Fant. They stole everything from Sutton, who was a breakout, but really busted.
Yeah, Cortland Sutton? More like Court Bland Sutton. Come on.
Boo!
That is just terrible.
Court Bland Sutton. Yeah. Wow.
That pretty much sums up his day. And I think we should focus on a couple other key takeaways. I'm just going to go right into mine as we recap last week, because one of my key takeaways is that Drew Lock is not going to kill the value of the Broncos playmakers. Now, obviously, that contradicts a bit what I just said, and that Cortland Sutton did not play that well at all and didn't get the major performance like you would have expected with a team that scored that many points. But Drew Lock's ESPN QBR of 98.7 was the 4th best for any QB this season. The only 3 single better single game ratings all belong to Lamar Jackson. So basically, wow, Drew Lock is the 2nd best quarterback in the entire NFL. John Elway has his quarterback for the future, and this can't go any more worse than any of the other guys. But joking aside, I mean, I think with the switch from Joe Flacco to Brandon Allen and then Brandon Allen to Drew Lock, people expected maybe Cortland Sutton to take a step back or Noah Fant or even the running backs. And these playmakers have been able to produce over the last several weeks. And again, Sutton had one down game. I'm not like, yes, it sucks this week, especially because it's the first round of the fantasy playoffs for most people and he let you down. But if you did move on from that and you have Sutton in your lineup, I'm still willing to roll him out there and be confident in Drew Lock not totally shafting the value of
they play the Chiefs this week, and then I think it's a pretty tasty matchup the week after. I think it's the Lions. I don't know for sure if you want to look it up, but yeah, it's the Lions. So I would still expect you to get a little Sutton from this wide receiver.
Good one.
Okay. That's a guy you can still start. And a takeaway that I have, and I tweeted this out this Sunday where I was on a real rampage when it comes to Twitter this Sunday, but Austin Eckler is one of those studs that you can continue to start, and you have to because of his upside in his efficiency. Now, they play the Jacksonville Jaguars, so I will ask you, do you think this is because Eckler is that good, or are the Jaguars just that bad? But Eckler had an 80-yard touchdown reception that was amazing. You knew he was gone the second that he caught the ball. And besides that, he also averaged 12.6 yards per carry, and that was like because they only gave him 8 carries, and he managed over 100 yards. I thought it was pretty insane that they were really using him as a change of pace guy to Melvin Gordon, and Gordon just kind of got all the little, like, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and then Eckler kind of, you know, struck when the when the defense was weak and they were kind of tired down from Gordon. So
I don't think it was just the Jaguars' bad defense, who has been atrocious this year after a couple of very dominant years on defense. And Austin Eckler was the running back 2 through the first 4 weeks of the season, and everyone sort of thought with Melvin Gordon coming back, he would just take an absolute fall and revert back to the role he had last year. Since Melvin Gordon returned in week 5, Austin Eckler is the running back 6. So not that bad. And we talked last week about the fact that he is so involved in the passing game, and that's really what's keeping his value so high and as high as it is now. So I totally agree with you that he's someone that you can confidently roll out there. He has the potential to blow up for games like this while also having a decent floor because of the passing game.
And maybe that's been a little obvious. He is one of, at least on Yahoo leagues, like one of the top 5 most owned players from playoff teams. So I hope there's no one out there that has been thinking about benching him. But if you have benched him in the past, you can't bench him anymore. He plays Oakland and Atlanta the next 2 weeks. Nothing that scares me there. Sidebar, is Austin Eckler the best air guitar player in the NFL?
He most certainly is. Quick correction there. The Chargers actually play Minnesota this upcoming week. So
Sorry. I misread this. Continue. Minnesota.
Minnesota has had a decent rushing defense, but again, because Eckler's not the primary rushing running back, if that makes sense, that he, I don't think his value dips that much, if at all. And you might even think that Minnesota could be out to a big lead, and the Chargers are trying to force their way back into the game, so they're passing a little bit more. So again, all that to say that I'm confident with Austin Eckler
for sure
moving
so
forward.
Oakland and Atlanta tease for later that those are the Jaguars' next 2 matchups. We'll talk about those running backs in a short while here, but moving on.
So you could trust Austin Eckler, and I don't know if you can trust Alvin Kamara anymore. I mentioned earlier that I think, you know, as a Kamara owner, someone who's had a very close spot in my heart.
3 years now, right?
He's no longer an RB1. And I hate to say that, but he's only got 2 touchdowns this year. This offense runs through Michael Thomas. They're not looking to him in the passing game nearly as much as they were. He had a couple good games where he had 10 targets in 2 games in a row. So there's that. But when you get less than 5 points in a game where your offense scores over 40 points, that cannot be good. I mean, Taysom Hill is absolutely ruining his value, which is just pisses me off because it's just straight up bullshit. But
you sound a little triggered.
I am.
By this gadget player from BYU.
It's just ridiculous. Like, you, and again, like, Latavius Murray hasn't been rushing any better than Alvin Kamara has, but Alvin Kamara hasn't gotten the large number of rushing attempts that he used to in the past. And it's, I don't think it's as much as, again, Latavius Murray taking away all of those, because you had Mark Ingram in the past. It's just, the offense just goes to Michael Thomas. Like, that's it. And, like, Alvin Kamara is just an ancillary part of it at this point, is what it seems like. Tell me if you think differently. Whereas
he hasn't really shown up in any like highlight reels or anything. So as someone who doesn't own him, it's like, oh well, what's Kamara been doing all year? And I think, you know, to put it back on you, we were talking about this today. I can tell you have a little tummy ache thinking about your lineup decisions this week, and this is for any Kamara owner. Are you ready to bench him depending on what you have, like in terms of matchups or guys that have been getting hot at other positions or at the running back position?
It's so tough, and a lot of it depends on who else you have available, because even though he's not an RB1, like, he's still, in my opinion, a high-end RB2, and he still has the potential to have one of those boom games. And I think part of what I'm latching onto is potential regression hitting, because he only does have 2 touchdowns. Like, he should have 4 or 5 more touchdowns. He's had a number of carries inside the 5-yard line that he's just not converting. He's gotten close to the end zone and gotten tackled at the 1 or 2-yard line, and then Taysom Hill or Drew Brees or whoever pushes it in. And I think there is the potential for that to come. And again, part of it's the emotional aspect of it, which we try to eliminate as much. But if Alvin Kamara goes off that 1 week and scores 30 points on my bench, I'm going to feel absolutely terrible. Then if I start Alvin Kamara, he scores 12 points, and DeAndre Washington, for example, goes off for another 22 points. Like, that's a decision I can live with, because DeAndre Washington would be playing the matchup and not the talent, and you hope that eventually talent will win out in this scenario. So, again, a lot of this depends on the situation. He's not a locked and loaded starter. Like, there are several situations I can imagine in which you are benching Kamara if you have better options. That said, I'm still probably going to start.
Yeah, I'm with you, and that's why I told you last week I would still roll Dak into your lineup over Ryan Tannehill despite the matchup, and I did not get a beer for that.
Yeah, Tannehill, more like Tana Thrill, am I right?
But despite that loss, Dak didn't kill you. I guess that's a similar emotional scenario. In any case, I'll move on to another, speaking of the Tana Thrill in the black hole, another takeaway that I had from this week is, you know, just a week ago we were talking about, oh, Devontae Parker could be a league winner for owners, and AJ Brown basically said, hold my beer, because he had an insane game yesterday, albeit in a good matchup. I think he is the best high upside flex that you can get right now if he's still unowned in your league, or if you have him on your bench. He's had 333 receiving yards in the last 3 weeks, which comes out to over 20 yards per target. So he is a low volume guy, but every time I see him with the ball, he is making star plays. And it's something where if you're a team that has your back against the wall, like against what seems like a, you know, an unstoppable force of a fantasy squad, I think AJ Brown could be an X factor in your lineup.
So I thought we might have this conversation later, but I'm just going to bring it up now because I think it is worth having. And part of this is selfish again in trying to determine my own lineup decisions. But I'm currently deciding, because I think this does add some context as to some start sit questions and how you might think about things. So I'm currently deciding between Robert Woods and AJ Brown. I think I've narrowed it down to those two, and Michael Gallup, who's another option for me, is sort of out of the running, if you will. And At this point, I'm leaning with Robert Woods for a number of reasons. He's played just as well as a, you know, over the last X games as AJ Brown, and Robert Woods has shown that he can provide some value without scoring a touchdown. The games in which AJ Brown has not scored a touchdown have killed you. He's scored less than 10 points in every single one of those games, whereas someone like Robert Woods has scored 13, and 24 points prior to this week without scoring a touchdown. And again, part of the Robert Woods equation is there is some regression coming. I think he scored his first receiving touchdown of the year this past week, and it really is a boom-bust scenario for AJ Brown. And if you're willing to live with him blowing up on your bench, if it does come to that. Now, I think the Texans-Titans game this upcoming Sunday will be a competitive one, so there is a chance that he does break that off. I mean, you saw the Broncos tear the Texans defense apart. But over the last 3 weeks, Tennessee has thrown the ball 44% of the time, which is the third lowest in the NFL over that span. And they want to run the ball. They want to give Derrick Henry the ball all day long and have Tannehill throw it when he needs to, not if he wants to. It's when he needs to. So, You think about the targets and consistency, and A.J. Brown has never had more than 8 targets in a game this entire year. He's had at least, you know, he's had 7 targets twice in the past 4 weeks. So You're really banking on that long touchdown to
that value. I think ultimately, like, not many people, at least in 12-team leagues, are going to be deciding between A.J. Brown and Robert Woods, though. So, you know, there's a scenario where you can start them both, but I agree with you when you're kind of evaluating your lineup decisions. We like to look at volume a lot over, you know, crazy efficiency like that. So completely agree with you on Woods, especially the way things have been going there. The Rams look like they're, you know, have got some momentum. Another player I'd look at in terms of volume, just offhand, I would probably start Jarvis Landry over AJ Brown for like the same reason. But again, if you need the higher upside, that's where AJ Brown has really been impressing thus far.
So the last takeaway I want to mention real quick before we move on to sort of our positional preview for week 15 is that Raheem Mostert is that dude. I mean, he had the second most fantasy points against New Orleans for a running back, behind only Christian McCaffrey, who has been obviously godlike this year. Before this week, New Orleans averaged 12.8 fantasy points allowed to opposing running backs, and he scored over 20, so he just absolutely obliterated them. Now, granted, the New Orleans defense did not look like the New Orleans defense this past week, but this is 2 straight weeks of Mostert performing well. Coleman has just been tossed to the side. I don't know what happen with him, but I think at this point the trend is that Mostert is the starter. And even though Matt Breida got worked in a little bit, it was his first game without double digit carries in a long time prior to his injury, and I think Kyle Shanahan is just going to ride the hot hand. So he's another guy I would feel confident throwing into your lineup and starting right away this week.
All right, so we are 1 week deep into the playoffs, but there are still lineups to be set. Like we mentioned, there's a lot of injuries that happened this week, so now we're going to do an update on positional previews and potentially some, you know, if you're in a tough spot, you have to really think about who's available out there or who can you pick up that no one else is going to pick up that can still help you win some games. So let's start at the QB position. If you're a Jameis Winston owner, you might be a little worried about that broken hand, somewhat broken hand. And with Sam, I think you've got a couple of different options that you're eyeing up.
So I'd be comfortable going back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. He scored 15 points against the New York Jets, and he could be without Devontae Parker and Albert Wilson, which certainly doesn't help, but he's going up against the Giants, who are not good at all. I think Fitzpatrick's just going to throw the ball up and let someone catch it regardless and continue to play the way he's been playing for the last month and a half. Are you confident rolling with him in this scenario?
I think he's got one of the better schedules. So if you want to, you know, we've seen Fitzmagic happen.
So I'll ask you, are you confident putting Fitzpatrick back out there?
Yes, I think if you are in the situation where you don't have a better option, that we've seen the Fitzmagic, you know. So his matchups the next 2 weeks, Giants and Bengals, should be good in terms of your confidence in putting him out there. I have another player here that I'm curious about because of the major upset against the Texans in Drew Lock. But if you're choosing between these two guys in your lineup, I would lean towards Fitzpatrick just because we have seen it a lot more often, and Drew Lock is more of like the where the mania is going right now.
Yeah, I think it's very much could be an anomaly and not what we expect. The Kansas City Chiefs are a fantastic pass rush defense. They pretty much shut down the Patriots this past week. I know I've talked up the Chiefs defense a couple times over the past several weeks, so I don't expect Drew Lock to have quite as good of a game, and think the Broncos might try to run the ball a little bit more against the Chiefs defense, who have been a little weaker against the run. And so I do agree with you that Fitzpatrick is the play over Drew Lock. Now, my other question, and this is just to get a conversation going, Mitchell Trubisky or Aaron Rodgers?
Well, don't get me started on Bears offense. Hashtag Bears offense. But, I mean, the way Trubisky's been playing, it's hard to not feel a little bit of the streaming bug here. I think that Rodgers has underwhelmed a lot in the season. But the last time these two teams played, it did not go well for either of them.
So
I look for options. I'd probably play Fitzpatrick over both, wouldn't you?
Interesting. So this game is in Lambeau. They play each other, Bears at Packers. So it'll be a great division rivalry. We both listened to the fantasy footballers who, over the past several weeks, have teased about starting Aaron Rodgers through this Redskins game and then having people drop him because they play the Bears and then the Vikings in weeks 15 and 16. Now, I wouldn't go as far as to say that. I would probably bench Rodgers and find other options if I can, because one, it's the playoffs. Like, I still think there is something to holding two quarterbacks in case that other guy gets hurt. Like, then you have Rodgers for week 16 against the Vikings, and the Vikings pass defense hasn't been that great either.
They've been holding on to that take without editing it to the Vikings pass defense for a while now.
Right. But so Rodgers, like you said, has disappointed this year. He has had a couple boom games, but I don't think the Bears defense is the one to do it against. Now,
there is a scenario in which the Packers throttle the Bears.
That's what they do.
They've done it before. It might be a bit of a homer take, but I mean, Dak managed 17 last week. A lot of it in garbage time, so I don't know if that means the defense has just stopped trying or what was going on there. But it, like you said, it's definitely a tough ask. I mean, again, I would probably look elsewhere between both of these guys.
Here's my take.
Or you just chase the points with Trubisky because...
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was just going to say is you take Trubisky because he's been playing well. He's been... I mean, the Dallas defense isn't terrible, but they're not... Great. So, like,
and the Packers are exploitable.
Yes, the Packers defense is not what it was earlier in the season. The Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller have been coming out well, so I'd take Trubisky in that. But let's move on to the tight end position. Now, we mentioned a couple of injuries to the tight end position, and one of those is Mark Andrews. Now, the Ravens play on Thursday against the New York Jets, so if Mark Andrews out, is Hayden Hurst a must-start?
I mean, with how little work the wide receivers get in the Ravens offense, I think he is a very attractive candidate at for must start status. Now, there's so many tight ends that are, you know, below George Kittle, basically, that where you could make a case for a bunch of different guys. But whoever the Ravens tight end is, I mean, because Andrews has been a must start, I think Hayden Hurst is definitely in that conversation. I even thought about Nick Boyle for a half second because you've seen him get some touchdowns, but he's basically on the level with of like Willie Snead in this offense in terms of volume. So I would expect, I mean, double check the depth chart, but Hurst probably has been getting more work. He's definitely the guy to focus on if you're an Andrews owner.
He certainly is a bit more explosive, as evidenced by the 61-yard touchdown he had this past week, but I'm actually on the opposite side. I don't think Hurst is a must start because Boyle is there. Because they're playing the Jets, I expect them to be able to run over them and be able to exploit that defense in other ways. I think other options like Tyler Higbee, who seems like he's been the real deal, if Gerald Everett is out again, I would actually rather play Tyler Higbee than one of the Ravens tight ends, because Mark Andrews was sort of the alpha of those three tight ends, yeah. And the other two had sort of been worked in at times throughout the year, and they would vulture a touchdown every once in a while, but I think they'll go to a scenario in which they're feeding both a little bit equally, and one doesn't necessarily stand out from the other.
Now, when you put it that way, you can't put a beta in your lineup in the playoffs, so... now you pose an interesting question here of, you know, which tight ends would you rather have, like Ian Thomas, Tyler Higbee, or Hayden Hurst? But as I mentioned, like, Hayden's an attractive option to me if Andrews is out because of that offense. Assuming all those guys are out, which would I prefer? One guy you didn't mention, and I'm surprised, is Noah Fant. Now, do you think that... Is that because you think Noah Fant is owned a lot already after his big, like his first boom game? Now he's had another, so he's definitely going to get picked up by someone this week, you would think.
Yeah, that's what I think. And in most of the leagues I'm in, he's no longer there. I mean, he had that several week stretch where he was just hogging the target share for the Broncos. And again, a lot of people weren't sure what would happen with the quarterback changes, but he certainly hasn't been impacted that much. He had a down week in week 13, but that's really the worst game he's had over the past month. So I think Noah Fant, if people have picked him up and were streaming, are no longer streaming at this point. But between Ian Thomas and Tyler Higbee, because I'm not going to really consider Hurst at this point, it is going to be Ian Thomas because they play the Seahawks, who have been one of the best matchups for tight ends in fantasy. And I think Tyler Higbee, while he has played well, can potentially get phased out of this offense if they totally change their scheme and go back to playing three wide receiver sets. Because against the Seahawks this past week on Sunday night, the Rams just totally switched up what they're doing. Cooper Kupp played less than a third of the snaps, so I certainly expect that to change. And I don't think the Cowboys defense, who the Rams play, is quite that bad.
For what it's worth, I'm on Noah Fant's player page on Fantasy Pros. This is probably before Week 14's games are played. His ownership is listed as 28% on Yahoo, 30% on ESPN. So at least, you know, look for him and make your decision between him and Higbee. Let's move on to the defenses. Now, personally, I think if you don't already have someone ready for the next couple weeks, then you're going to be shit out of luck. But for those who maybe had a defense that ended up being a DiGiorno team of the week, how would you be looking to switch up that position last minute?
So you do make a great point. And I think if you're in the playoffs, if you know you're going to be playing in week 15, plan for week 16, because you don't want to have to scramble in the championship week for a defense, because that is a position that could swing a week in one way or another. And like you mentioned, you know, before the podcast, we were talking, most start sit decisions at this point have been settled. You can probably get rid of the handcuff depending on who it is, depending on, you know, the rest of the teams that are in the league, in the league you're in, knowing if, okay, say Leonard Fournette gets hurt or something like that, are the other people that I'm playing against going to go rush out and pick up Rykel Armstead? So think about some of that game theory as you're, you know, deciding on who to drop. But the one defense that I think could make a big difference in week 15 is the Eagles defense. And if you own them, I tweeted this out earlier, you're really hoping that Dwayne Haskins starts for them, because he has a 14% sack rate on the year, which is 8% higher than Case Keenum at 6%. Now, when Deshaun Watson led the league in sacks last year, I believe he was at about a 10% sack rate. So that really shows just how bad that defense is. And obviously, we talked last week about how the Eagles defense got exploited by the Dolphins, but the Dolphins are in a different tier than what the Redskins are, and the Redskins are just a hot fire at this point and not anything good. So I as bad as the Eagles defense has been in the passing game, especially this year, I'd be more than confident rolling them out in week 15 should Haskins be starting. And it sounds like he's supposed to be.
Yeah, a couple other guys that, defenses rather, that come to mind. I think you mentioned the Chiefs last week, and despite, you know, Drew Lock impressing us this week, that's probably a defense you can still roll with.
It's also in Kansas City, so that's a big deal too.
Yeah, that's going to be a big moment for Drew Lock coming off a big win. Maybe he's taking a little too easy this week in between. But going back to the article I mentioned last week, Jacob Herlin, at Jacob Law Herlin, if you want to give him a follow. He has some top five defenses listed from last week's article going into weeks 15 and 16. I think, you know, he mentions the Packers defense. I think that's okay. I'd rather, you know, potentially look at Cleveland's defense at Arizona, because Kyler Murray seems to be on the downswing at the end of the year. It's been a long season for him. And, you know, potentially the Jets defense or the Dolphins defense in week 16, if you're really looking for a good matchup, because they play the Steelers, Duck Hodges, and the Bengals, respectively. So some different offensive matchups to target. You asked me if I would start the Lions defense against the Bucks, and to that I say hell no, because I'm obsessed with the Bucs offense, and the Colts only had 5 points against them. I think the system...
Better defense than the Lions. Let's be clear about that. The Colts, who I'm talking about, yeah, and the Lions have just been one of the worst defenses in the NFL this season. So just wanted to point it out, because Jameis is...
Okay, so that was a joke question.
Well, Jameis has been a turnover monster. Like, you've been able to play some of these terrible defenses against him because he's turning the ball over on average 37 times a game. So there's like a baseline of points that you're getting from them. But let's move on to some running backs. And I just want to point out a couple of guys that you shouldn't get fooled by their production. And it's two running backs. It's David Johnson, who had 12.3 points. And that was on 5 total touches, because he got a receiving touchdown. Now, granted, it was a good catch. Like, it was a great play, but he played 37% of the snaps compared to 65% of the snaps for Kenyon Drake. So Kenyon Drake leads that backfield right now, and do not trust David Johnson, because he had his best game since week 5, I think. The other guy I want to mention is Devontae Freeman, who played well, but again, that was against the worst team against fantasy running backs in the Carolina Panthers. Brian Hill is still there and is getting some run, and the Falcons play San Francisco this upcoming week. So Devontae Freeman, if you used him this week, good for you. put him on your bench and put someone else in there.
Yeah, those are the guys that you would want to hold, and if you get to week 16, then you could consider playing either of them against Oakland. Jacksonville, I would feel. The Jaguars have also had a bad run defense. These big cat teams have all been cursed since the black cat went on Monday Night Football.
On the other side, there are some players who had down weeks this week that I think should bounce back. First and foremost is Leonard Fournette. He plays Oakland and has been just a stud throughout this entire year. Chris Carson versus the aforementioned Carolina Panthers. Obviously, no more Rashad Penny. With him getting a knee injury, it has been ruled out for the year.
The currency of the penny has been discontinued.
Okay, moving on. These two. I'm not even going to give you anything for that.
It's a useless currency. We need to discontinue the penny.
Yeah, we'll just get rid of change altogether. Anyway, these last two guys could go either way. And I'll start with Ronald Jones, who plays Detroit, who we mentioned is not a great defense. Ronald Jones, we thought, was the starter in Tampa Bay, but Peyton Barber still keeps finding his way into the lineup to get carries and steal touches away from Ronald Jones. So do you think Ronald Jones is valuable enough to put him in your lineup?
Ronald Jones. You just keep pulling me back in. Now, sorry, I just pulled up the box score to be safe because nothing this week actually really changed my opinion from 2 weeks ago when I had Ronald Jones in like three different lineups. He had 0.8 points. He was a DiGiorno player of the week because he didn't deliver when I thought he was going to take over the starting job. And Peyton Barber has a great game in his place. Instead, this week, it was all passing. You know, Jameis had his amazing performance despite the three picks. The rushing stats for this, Ronald Jones had 11 carries for 36 yards, average of 3.3 yards per carry. Peyton Barber had 11 carries for 34 yards. So neither of them did great. It was basically the exact same. It's kind of disgusting. And I mean, against the Lions, that's what would pull me back in if you're desperate. If he had some more injuries, but...
So, I think a big distinction here is the work in the passing game, because Ronald Jones did get 5 targets, which was tied with Dare Ogunbowale, our fellow Wisconsin alum. So, Ronald Jones has been more involved as a pass catcher. I think Ronald Jones as a flex option is obviously a bit more safe and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, tolerable than trusting him as your RB2. But again, if it's between someone like Devontae Freeman and Ronald Jones, I'm leaning Ronald Jones' way. And the other guy I'll ask you about is Sony Michel, who it feels like he's just not getting worked in these games where we expect him to have a decent workload. And they play Cincinnati this week, which you think might be a blowout, but the way the Patriots have been playing, that's not a guarantee. Like, the Bengals are playing semi-decently.
Yeah. No, he's a doo-doo butt. I'll try to keep this shorter. I've been keeping him in my lineup every week. I did make the playoffs in part because of that, because I thought that Skarnecki was going to turn the running offense around and they'd get him enough volume. But as it always goes with the Patriots, there's three different guys in the rotation. You've got Burkhead in there getting reps now that he's healthy again. You've got James White, who had the blow-up game 2 weeks ago. So I know that's like a weird anomaly. Like, sometimes it works, sometimes it's like, oh, super frustrating. I think because it's frustrating, you can't, like, you got to find a better option.
I believe we forgot the fourth guy, Brandon Bolden, who had one carry for 10 yards and a touchdown. Okay. So, but it, to your point, like, there's too many people to be trusting anyone except James White because he is getting worked into the passing game. So let's move on to the final position in wide receiver. And the first guy that you want to talk about is Robbie Anderson, who's been coming on as of late, didn't play well through the first half of the season, but might have a great end of the year.
Yeah, Ben Gretsch did interesting stat splits on his Twitter about Robbie Anderson, who in the past has come on strong at the end of the year, and he's doing it again this year. But the time, the runway has really vanished for the Jets to run the table or have competitive games, because all of their good matchups are gone. And now they play the Ravens and the Steelers, if my memory serves me correctly. I don't trust Robbie Anderson in either of these matchups. I don't trust Darnold in either of these matchups. It could be a play from behind situation. They just will their way to some counting stats, but it's definitely not a scenario where you want to trust him, because the Jets have really been up and down in this last month of football. I would much rather trust some guys on hashtag Bears offense, which we alluded to before. I just want to give Allen Robinson a little bit of credit here, because he's quietly been a guy worth starting every week. He's had a couple games that might have killed your lineup, but other than that, a really solid player for the Bears. And the question remains, is it Anthony Miller's season as well? I think he had come back from injury a few weeks back. He's now had 3 weeks in a row in a half-point PPR with double digits, and he saw a lot of touchdowns in his rookie season, so I'm curious, like, maybe he'll find the end zone in one of these games despite not seeing that and just getting enough catches and yards in the previous weeks.
You got to pay attention to Taylor Gabriel and whether he's going to be playing, because the splits for him and Robinson when Taylor Gabriel has been out are drastic. So that's a big factor for me. I think, again, it's tough. I don't know if I would trust Anthony Miller in my lineup right now, because yes, his target share has been there. Yes, there might be some touchdown regression coming, but I still think there's, at the receiver position for the Bears, a little bit more potential to, you know, have those up and down weeks, because Allen Robinson has been a target monster. It is a divisional game, so you might want to throw things out in that in that regard. But I just think there are better options, like AJ Green, like some other players like that.
Oh, you're actually talking of AJ Green for once?
AJ Brown.
Wrong color. Whoops.
little Freudian slip there, I guess. So I think there are certainly better options out there than Anthony Miller at this point.
Yeah, I mean, to preface or postface, how would you say, caveat on all of these position previews or updates that we've been doing, I think every name we've made is someone that it's like, well, either avoid them if you were ever thinking of starting them now, or like if you're desperate type of guys. Because exactly, these are all like, if you need to fill in a player that got hurt on your roster, these are the names. So definitely, like, we talked up AJ Brown way more than Anthony Miller for sure. The last thing I would mention, just in case, it seems like the Jags are in a real death spiral right now, including DJ Chark. I think one of the injuries you mentioned, and it sounds like he's week to week.
Yeah, he was seen in a walking boot on Monday.
Yikes.
Which is not great.
So when it comes to the Jags offense, I mean, they're playing the Raiders, and the Titans just threw on the Raiders a lot. The Jags still have to play this game, and so there are fantasy points that exist in this matchup. D.D. Westbrook would assumedly be the number one option for Minshew, who threw Westbrook a touchdown pass in his return when Foles got benched. But, you know, they've also got Chris Conley, which people have liked to throw that name around during the season. I would not trust him very much, but Westbrook and Miller, I think, are kind of in the same tier of desperation. I trust both of them over Robbie Anderson, but really a gross group, and might have to apologize for throwing all these names at you guys this week, but hey, we're doing the best we can.
I do think DeeDee Westbrook is someone who I'd be comfortable throwing in there in weeks 2 through 7, when Minshew was starting and D.D. Westbrook was healthy. D.D. actually led the team in target share at 25%, with D.J. Chark following at 23%, and Chris Conley was down at 14%. So I would be comfortable with D.D. Westbrook because the Raiders' defense can be exploited. This very well could be a competitive match or a game in which the Raiders are leading so that the Jaguars are forced to pass the ball a little bit more. So I do think that Westbrook would be worthwhile putting in your lineup. And I do think that all of our advice is worth putting into
your brain.
Your brain, which you already have if you've gotten this far. So thanks for sticking with us. I will wrap out the show for Andrew Mackins at Andrew Mackins, our producer Garner at Garnther, myself Sam Hoppin at Sam Hoppin, and you can follow our Twitter account for the podcast at PodAfterTD. And we hope to see you next week with championships on the line. And with that, the Robbie Gold in the Superdome, the kick is good!
Hard to bring him down. By the time he touched the ball, there was a chance that he's going to miss. Tannehill, under pressure, going to throw it deep, has his man open down the middle of the field, and he's got him! A.J. Brown to the end zone for the touchdown! 91 yards!